Wednesday Night Rugby on Off the Ball.
With Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us. Everyone in.
It's spinning! It's spinning! Jonathan Sexton has made it!
Do you feel moderately happy?
No, I feel like I've been kissing my sister, I suppose.
In the pocket for his drop goal attempt. Here he goes, O'Gara. He's done it! That surely is the grand slam.
We target players all the time. That's part of rugby, isn't it? Let me know.
Sexton, wonderful pass, and Stockdale finishes.
There'll be more than grenades. There'll be full tanks and full shells landing on the Aviva.
Grand Slam winners on St. Patrick's Day at Twickenham.
So suddenly here we are, round five of the Six Nations is upon us. Keith Wood, you're there.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Very well. Rory O'Connor from the Irish Independent here in the studio. Hello.
Hey, Joe.
So team news, just to touch on briefly, obviously, Schmidt's going to name the team tomorrow, so we won't dwell overly on this. Dan Levy in line for a return is the general reporting. Obviously, Van der Fleer is out. Sean O'Brien in the mix there as well. Greg Feek said Levy has some X factor, which would come in handy. Sean O'Brien a fraction off where he'd like to be. That said, it wouldn't shock anyone if O'Brien came back in.
Yeah.
And there is some confusion. I'm seeing different reports over Tadhg Byrne.
Well, they've done a bit of a number on us yesterday. If you, as we left yesterday's press conference, we all felt, and into the evening, that Tadhg Byrne was in serious trouble when it comes to the World Cup squad. If you listen to what Greg Feek and Joe Schmidt before him had said about Tadhg Byrne, you would wonder where he fits into the plans at all. Turns out it looks like Ian Henderson has a knee injury and Tadhg Byrne's actually starting. So we asked about Byrne yesterday and what he has to do to get into the setup. And I mean, it was a long answer about training ground performance, about being a bit undercooked coming into the tournament. But it was almost, you know, you were left thinking, God, this guy's got a long way to go. Murray Kinsler reported this morning, he got the story about the Byrne being in and Henderson looks like is out. And it looks like O'Brien may get the nod as well. Having again, like Levy was bigged up to a massive degree by Feek. And
sorry, I was taking it as almost a matter of fact that Levy was in.
It looks like O'Brien is firmly in the mix for that position anyway. So it's, they did a good job of because they want, you know, they don't want Wales knowing the team that they're putting messages out there. It's fair enough.
Yeah.
They're playing the game. But yeah, like I'm really excited to see James Ryan and Tadhg Byrne play together.
Yeah.
I just think what a dynamic combination against the dynamic pack. You know, Wales have a lot of breakdown threats, but Byrne, a player they really respect over there, is it's just, you know, really a player who can come in and energise a pack, and then O'Brien, if he does get the nod, it's a redemption story. If it's Levy, it's like 20 carries, 20 tackles a match, a player we haven't seen all season play for Ireland. And if he doesn't get the nod, does he come onto the bench, or does Jack Conan, has he done enough to stay there? So I think, you know, they're interesting selections. They're very they're very exciting selections if they come to pass. So it's going to be, it'll be an interesting day tomorrow.
I think we're all looking forward to see Tadhg Byrne in an Irish shirt, Keith. And it sort of needs to happen. You felt it needed to happen in this Six Nations. Injury hasn't allowed him to play up until now. So that Ian Henderson injury may be somewhat fortuitous on several fronts. 13 Champions Cup games, Rory pointed out in the Irish Independent this morning. Six games, 13 turnovers in the Champions Cup. So we know what he can do at the breakdown. So a word on Byrne, and then also on the Dan Levy, Sean O'Brien point. Shane Jennings was making the point that when it comes to the breakdown, Levy is about the best we have in that department when it comes to turnover. That's an area that Wales are strong in.
Yeah, it is. I think, so if we go back to Tadhg Byrne, firstly and foremost, he, his level of performance for Scarlets last year was pretty incredible. Like every time he turned up, he seemed to be the best player on the field. Since he's come over to Munster, we thought there might be a bedding in period of time, but there wasn't. I think his standard of performance has been very excellent. And he was unfortunate with the injury that goes in there. There is, even though there is a conversation that was happening yesterday about whether he would ever fit into the Irish system, he isn't 6'10", and he isn't such a huge line out forward in real terms, but he has unique skills, and they're skills that we actually could do with on the field. So, look, I would have said he would always be in the mix. That would be my fit on it as to whether he'd be sitting on a bench or playing. And I think there's an element of horses for courses. And I have to say, even two or three weeks ago, once we thought there was a chance of him getting fit, I thought he would be playing. on this weekend coming because of the time he'd spent in France, because of the threat that he poses, and the ability of slowing down ball, which is what Wales will be trying to do to Ireland. He's well able to do it on the opposite side. So I think that's very important. For Sean O'Brien and Levy, I think with the three that we have, with Van der Fleer, they all have similarities and different strengths as well at the same time. And I kind of don't mind who's picked. And I find that a very unusual situation, is to say, well, you know, do we have those three options that we can have? With the way the injuries have fallen, you know, we've got to see them all at different times. They've all played really well at different stages. And I think Sean O'Brien, he played really well on the first game he hit back. I think he dropped a little bit afterwards. But Sean O'Brien has huge respect from the Welsh guys. They've toured with him. They know what he's like. They also have a huge level of maybe disrespect for him for the fact that he gave out about Gatland. And even for that alone, it could be good just to kind of pee them off a little, having him on the field. It's a big game, and Sean O'Brien plays really well in big games. Mm. It's whether Levy is fit enough, you know, to get back, to be able to play. And if it ended up being 50-50, you would probably see one of them going on the bench. Though I thought Conan did really well last week. Actually, for me, played one of the best games that he's played for Ireland.
I mean, we haven't really had a nailed-down back row for the last 18 months at all, far from it.
I just think with the open-side position, we've seen it with England. You know, Underhill was their star in November, and then he's gone out, and Curry is... You need two or three. You know, Curry has been the star of their championship. So
because it's so attritional.
Well, the number seven position is just the most attritional position there is. I think statistically, Hooker is actually more dangerous, but I think open-side is just after it. But I think you put all three together fit with a full World Cup pre-season behind them, I think Levy and O'Brien are probably ahead of Van der Fleer, and I think I think Keith's right. It's probably his horses for courses in certain times, but I think one of the things you notice against England was how much Ireland missed Levy's energy. And you know, when you've got Levy and Ryan putting in 20 carries, 20 tackles a game, and you know, plus Sander doing something similar, the numbers that they can get up, that drove Ireland Six Nations last year. That high energy, high retention, you know, multi-phase game where they just bully teams and ground them into submission. And we saw a bit of that last Saturday last Sunday with the, you know, close to the first choice pack back. So it's a fascinating one. And yeah, I've almost forgotten about the Gatland-O'Brien subplot, which makes like things even more interesting, because he would have missed last year's Six Nations. But Levy was supposed to start against the All Blacks and got ruled out at the 11th hour.
Yeah.
You'd love to see them fit. It's a bit like the centre situation. We still haven't had really a time where Henshaw, Ringrose and Bundiaki are all fit and available together. It's just, it hasn't worked out, and I guess that's the nature of it. But it'll be an interesting one. Yeah, I think Levy, it seemed like a strange one that he hadn't played for so long and they were going to bring him back in, even though that seemed to be the noises coming out of there.
Yeah.
Like O'Brien has played three internationals this season. He's much more match-hardened. It makes sense in that regard. And again, Tyburn was up in Belfast for the preparation, so maybe we should have seen it coming a bit more.
Keith, Ireland have used 34 players across these four games. What have we learned about Irish strength and depth?
I think we've learned that if we don't bring our full energy and A game for big matches, we don't win, irrespective of who you have on the field. And I don't know whether Levy would have made such a huge difference, Rory, on that first game. I just thought either emotionally we were off the mark against England, and you suffer when that happens. I think what we have learned, if we talk about those three players again for a moment, I don't really mind. I think we don't seem heavily weakened if one of them isn't there and you're picking from another two, or if two of them aren't there. You say, well, how blessed we are to have those players in there. I do think we suffer a little bit in terms of if we've three, four or five, like we did in the last World Cup.
Yeah.
We suffer a little bit to who is supposed to take on the mantle, who's the guy who's supposed to lead. So the really good thing for me for the match at the weekend, and we haven't talked on that really yet, but there were a lot of pluses and there were a few minuses for me that nothing to do with Ireland. But you have to have different players putting their hand up, taking leadership roles. When players are targeted, other players have to take it up. And I felt we did that better on Sunday than we had in the previous games. And the only caveat I would put on Sunday, and we haven't really touched on it, but the caveat I would put on it was, for some very strange reason, which watching the game, I couldn't even understand why, France didn't have a hard press defence. And Ireland have struggled all year with hard press defence, and we are absolutely guaranteed to have a hard press defence on Saturday. Mm-hmm. And France didn't do it. So they said they had a good defensive line, which is a high level of discipline, but there was no quick pace off the line to put 9, 10 and 12 under pressure. That didn't really happen in the game.
Yeah.
Their tackling was good, but the pressure was not. So we were given a little bit of an armchair ride. And I thought, like, we managed that first game entirely, and or the first half of the game entirely. And listening to Joe Schmidt and all the people talking about it afterwards, they said Ireland were in total control. They were in total control, but I felt there was very little urgency brought to it by France. So that's the only caveat I put in our performance for last weekend.
Yeah. Same question to you. 34 players across four games. Joe Schmidt has talked about this Six Nations almost as a vaccination against what happened to the 2015 World Cup. I must say I would share Keith's sense, having come through these past four games, that for all the planning and all the preparation, and you suspect that since 2015, on that day at the Principality Stadium, Joe Schmidt has been working against it happening again, the Argentinian game I'm talking about. And yet I do still feel you come around 4 years later, if they lose four or five of their best, it's just too big a blow. It's probably too big a blow for any team.
Yeah, I think so. I think there are certain positions where Ireland are much better set up than others. Mm. I think it could be 37 by the end of the weekend if, say, Marmion gets a go. You know, he hasn't featured all Six Nations. It could be his turn. You know, if Levy goes on the bench, if Byrne starts, that's, you know, that's a huge amount of players to play and to get exposed to this level. There are players who probably haven't done enough. You know, Chris Farrell, I don't think was brilliant when he got his chance in a team that wasn't going forward. A couple of others who probably, you know, Jack McGrath has probably gone backwards a little bit, even though we know he's class. And but then again, Dave Kilcoyne and John Ryan have gotten the goal. But yeah, if you take Tadhg Furlong,
Sean Cronin jumps to mind.
Sean Cronin again, yeah, you know. But then Niall Scannell has done well when he's come in. The Munster front row came on and dominated the French in that second half, which was really impressive. But I think your overall point is right. I think 9-10-3, I think James Ryan has become almost, you know, the pillar of that pack.
Yeah. So you have to, like, say no one stepped into the Rob Kearney breach as you know.
No, Jordan Armour did well the weekend, but again, like, you know, Keith said it didn't put a press on. They also, yeah, you know, he never got a kick to the backfield apart from the one that Pinot knocked on. So,
and you could argue he was there a bit early himself, Larmour, and was jumping from a standing start.
Yeah, so I mean, to judge him on one moment would be harsh, but I'd love to see him. It looks like Kearney will come back in this weekend, and I completely understand that selection given the stakes, but you'd almost love to see Larmour given another shot just to see how we get on.
Yeah.
Because he wasn't tested in that way. So there are, yeah, you're right. If a number of players go down in the week between the last game and the last pool game and the quarter final, yeah, that's going to be a massive concern. Yeah. But at the same time, the way the pool works this time is different, because the first two games are the most important, and then they've got, like, I think a 21-day period or something like that to get ready for the quarterfinal.
Yeah.
So they can maybe manage themselves a bit better. That week in Cardiff was so high pressure, so it was claustrophobic almost with all the things that were going on. Mm. But you're right, I think, yeah. Like, if you take out those really important players, like Sexton, Murray, Furlong, a couple of others, Rob Kearney.
You know, don't get me wrong, Keith, Schmidt's done, like, remarkable things in his department. You know, Joey Carberry down at Munster, when you look at the body of work over 4 years, it's been remarkable. They beat the All Blacks without Conor Murray, you know. But for all of that, my nagging sense now, my feeling is, you're still just in that vulnerable position, as I think every team is, to be fair. But for a while I thought Schmidt was almost going to do the impossible here, whereby you could lose 3, 4, 5 of your better to best players and withstand it. Players can still come in, like Marmion did against the All Blacks, by all means. But you can't vaccinate against what happened in 2015.
I think we got really shook against England, and we had a pretty good team against England, but we had a lot of players coming back from injury. We just weren't sharp. We didn't get to the pitch of the game. We really didn't. Mm. And I think that has knocked us back. So we've been blessed in many respects by the order of the matches that have come since. Scotland away, and Scotland were, we've seen it as this competition has gone on. They've really struggled with it, trying to hold a team onto the field. Mm. Then getting Italy away. I mean, they're the two best matches to have away from home. And then we had France at home, and France were poor on Sunday, you know. And so I think we're lucky. We've built up a level of confidence. We now need to jump a very large element. So I'm just saying, with that lack of confidence, I don't think we've seen the full extent of it.
Yeah.
But from a conversation we had a few weeks ago, that you just use everything that happens at this present moment in time and you put it into the pot come pre-season for the World Cup. That's what you're looking for.
Yeah.
You know, that's what you're trying to get to. It's exactly... You know, you hope that doesn't happen too much. And not all the matches are going to be as tough as the matches we've just kind of put down. So,
yeah, there's the freakish possibility nobody gets injured in the World Cup. So we're talking, you know, we're all speculating here. Wales have scored 9 tries. So have Italy. Wales are rather good defensively. We know that.
Yeah, they're better tackling than Italy.
They are better tackling. 160 tackles in the second half alone against Scotland. How good are they, though? How scary are this Welsh team? Not one bonus point thus far.
I think Wales, with momentum in Cardiff, going for a Grand Slam. I did a piece on the 2005 game that when they came out of nowhere and won and beat Ireland, who were going for the championship themselves that day, kind of kicking off this era of Welsh rugby today. And it's just one of these universal truths of Six Nations rugby that if Wales have momentum going into the final day, they're very, very difficult to stop. And it may be a cliche, but there's, you know, like all cliches, there's a bit of truth to it. They're 13 games unbeaten. But their unbeaten run, it wasn't as impressive. You know, they built it coming into this championship and it was never as impressive as England's back in 2017, the one Ireland brought an end to, or New Zealand's in 2016. They've grounded out. They've become a very high-functioning, functional team. Mm. They don't do anything particularly amazing, apart from defending. Their defence is exceptional under Sean Edwards, who has underpinned this Warren Gatland era and been a huge support to Gatland over his time. They really look like a horrible team to play against. They look like a team who just deny you time and space. And this group of players, going back to 2015 and before that, just look like a team that never die. You know, England got on top of them in the exact same way as they did in 2015 in that pool game, that famous pool game. And yet they just wrested control of the momentum back in that game. Not by doing anything particularly spectacular, although there were big moments in it. They just knew what to do at the right time. Mm. He's replaced Dan Biggar, but Dan Biggar doesn't look like... You know, it bothers him when he comes on with 20 minutes to go. He has the right approach and he's able to change games. And that's a lovely bit of, you know, Ireland don't have someone, I don't think, yet. I mean, Carberry is excellent, but I don't think he's at the level yet where he's going to come into a game against England and turn it with 20 minutes to go. I hope I'm wrong, but, you know, I think, you know, to be able to bring someone on with Biggar's experience is huge. So he has a nice impact. They've solidified their set piece and they've done it the kind of old-fashioned way of getting your defence right and building into it. And yeah, their attack isn't brilliant, but I'd say that's their focus at a World Cup camp. But it's got them to this point and they'll feel at home against an Ireland team that, yeah, was good, really good last week, but, you know, they saw how England took away their strengths and thrived. They'll feel confident going into this game, and a confident Wales team at home with a Grand Slam on the line is a thing to fear. Whether Ireland need to fear them at all, given their own strengths and how they can, you know, what they can fall back on and their own record over the last 23 international, I think it's 21 for 23 or 22, 24, something along those lines, is questionable. So this was always going to be the game of the championship. England kind of took the win from it in that first game, but this always looked like the one, and it's going to be, I'm pretty torn on it. You can probably hear from my answer. I don't know, but
yeah.
You know, I think Wales are very, that they're impressive without being particularly, they don't look great, but
yeah,
the fundamentals are all there.
Sexton was talking this week, actually, and he was saying of the Welsh approach. I don't think they're going to give us too many opportunities with lineouts. They'll probably kick long and they'll chase hard, which is slightly connected with the points you're making. So how do you want Ireland to exit? What do you want them to do when they get their hands on the ball and they're being pressed?
I still want us to kick to exit rather than try and carry out in that situation. I think if the circumstances, it depends on what the setup that Wales have in their defensive line. If the opportunity is to kick to find space, kick for space. Mm. If it is to run it, because if they've three players in the backfield, the space is on the outside, it's outside 13. That's where you have to go to. So you have to see what's happening in there, but it can't be too flat to the line in that instance. to get it out to that outside area. We can't let ourselves be gobbled up between 9, 10 and 12 all the time. That's the one fear I have with it.
Right, OK. It was interesting as well, just to finish off on France. I know we're sort of jumping between both games, but Gordon Darcy was making an interesting observation on their attack today in the Times, and he was saying when France go past six phases, they look clueless. Bash it up, one-man runners, no plan, unlike every other serious international team. And he said he was talking to Johnny Wilkinson. They were in studio at the weekend, and he said, we agreed the French players are not being coached the basic principles of modern attacking rugby, which is incredible. They don't build phases, like everyone else, to eventually find a gap. And he says, this is how Northern Hemisphere rugby was played in the 2000s. There were starter and directional plays to create mismatches, hit the midfield off two rucks and then swing back the other way. Nowadays, a team must map out 10 phases before they seek a specific weakness or come up with a brilliant first phase move off set piece. Not France. They have no mechanisms to restart momentum when it peters out. Which is very damning, really, Rory. And it's not like they were much better defensively.
Yeah, I don't think there's a must way of playing. I mean, you know, I would disagree with that. I think if France win collisions, suddenly things open up for them. I think what Ireland did was they won pretty much every collision in the game, a bit like what England did to Ireland in the previous game. And you know, we saw that France's attack looked fine when they played, you know, when they beat Scotland up in Paris, and suddenly, you know, it flowed and everything. But it was just, even though it was a consistent selection from the game before, they just didn't look like a team. They just didn't look like a team, really. You know, they look like a collection of individuals who've been brought together for this championship with no background together, and expect Patrona against the second best team in the world, and said, you know, go out and play, and with a very basic game plan. Their defense, you know, Keats outlined what the problems in their defense, but they also lost confidence. They just got Ireland, put them in the corner and beat them up, and
reminded them very quickly.
Yeah, when you've made hundreds of you know, 100 tackles, then you get the ball and you're trying to win collisions, and your whole game plan is based on collisions, and you're just wrecked. Mm. And, you know, that's, you know, your attack is always going to break down when you're put in that situation. So they didn't get any momentum in the game. They lost confidence. They looked like the kind of callow team that they are. Mm. Some of their players aren't good enough. You look at some of the players in top 14, you wonder whether, you know, what have they done wrong not to get in. And you look at the coach, and the coach is just a very uninspiring figure. You know, he doesn't, you know, there's a lack of cohesion in every facet of it. And you know that they'll pitch up the World Cup with a completely different team. Mm-hmm. You know, there are really good players in France, and if they can get them together, they always have a chance. But I think they just need it. Like, they're hosting the 2023 World Cup, and you'd hope, for France's sake, that they can use that as a catalyst to get some, you know, proper structures in place and do it their own way, because they shouldn't follow a New Zealand template or an Irish template. They should do things the French way that suits them, and I don't think it's going to be easy to impose it from outside, but they have to find a way. I mean, the shining light is that under-20s team from last year. I mean, whether it's get the coaches in from that team and just start from the bottom up, I don't know. I mean, I don't know where to fix it, but it's I think it's sad. You love French rugby. Well, I love French rugby growing up, and it's just become this kind of, you know, you laugh at it, really.
Well, in some ways it was a bit grim when Ireland were, what, 26-0 up, Keith? It was almost like kind of a non-event.
Should have been more.
Not good for anyone, yeah. I know that there's a sheen in the scoreboard. Do Italy have a decent chance in Rome, or will France just still be way too strong for them?
I was there on that day, whatever it was, 4 or 6 years ago, maybe 6 years ago when they won, which is one of my favourite memories of rugby, actually. It was extraordinary. It was full. The noise was amazing. France were poor. Italy were brave and valiant, and you'd still expect them to lose. But on this occasion, they won, and it was amazing. For me, I still think France should go away there. France had a doubt coming to Dublin, and the youth never have a doubt coming to Dublin. And I don't think they have any doubt going down to Rome. And that, in terms of a story, fits into France and French teams playing away from home forever. If it's very, very difficult after half an hour, they often don't get to the end, you know. And I think they would go down there saying, listen, we know we can win this game. We can actually dig it in a little bit more, and they need to do a bit more. I would say France go and win that one.
Okay. Our rugby coverage is, with thanks to Vodafone, Team of Us, everyone in. People are watching on YouTube and Periscope and Twitter. Eddie Byrne back on the Wales game. I can't understand how the Pro 14 Welsh teams are so poor this year, yet the national team is doing so well. I reckon we know the individuals well enough to beat them. Fintan Collins, it'll be a cracker, good old-fashioned blood and thunder game. Their defence, our defence, and the team that blinks first will lose. I hope Johnny will drop back a bit on this one. All right, there's been a lot of talk this week as well about Gatland, Keith, and giving him the credit that he deserves in some respect. Like, he's going for his third Grand Slam. Ireland have three in their history. His credentials are impeccable at this stage, really. This would be just a crowning moment for him.
Yeah, he's done great work in Wales. He really has. I mean, he went from the Irish game to the club game. I think he readjusted what he did when he went to the club game. He has far more of a manager's role, like almost like a soccer manager's role, and seems to do that far more. Relies very heavily on his coaches and relies on his own man management and his selection. And I have to say, in the last number of years, his selection has been, it's kept the players on edge. And he seems to get the best out of the players. And he's revered in Wales, and he's done very well there. And it's been a while since they've won, but this is a big one for him. But he was already saying it in the game, how good it would be winning a Six Nations next week, which I liked his phraseology. He did, you know, and I'm not sure that they'll have any level of complacency. And I think in many respects, a lot of the noise about what's happened in Welsh rugby, which is very upsetting for the players, also means that they want to be able to go out on a high. And he also was kind of teasing, this is his last Six Nations game over Wales. So as to whether he might do it with somebody else, and I know he's been talked about for taking over the English job as well. So look, he's delivered in a big way. If he gets the third one, he will put himself down on, as one of the great coaches in Wales.
So the clock is ticking here. Final thoughts on this game, Rory? You said you were torn at the outset. This is tough to call.
It is tough to call. I tipped Wales at the outset of the tournament, so I'll probably stick with them, but not with any great confidence. I think with Ireland, you know, they obviously played very well last week and we think they're back, but we don't know if they're back. Mm. It'd be a hugely restorative thing to go to Cardiff and deny them a Grand Slam. Whatever happens with England, you know, I think it would be huge for Ireland's momentum going to the World Cup. But I think they'd be happy with a big, strong performance. And, you know, to come down on the wrong side of the fine margins or the right side of the fine margins, they'll obviously mind. But at the end of the day, when he's doing a Six Nations review, Joe Schmidt will be pretty happy as long as he gets a big performance.
Yeah, it's a big litmus test. I mean, totally shape, if Ireland were to win, it would totally shape how we'd all view this Six Nations. Keith, how do you see it going?
Yeah, I'm expecting this to be our most complete performance. And I don't know that it will be the most expansive, but I think this is the one where we should have our A intensity game. And if we bring the right intensity to it, which we brought to so many games last year, now is our chance to get back to that standard. And if we can do that, I think we put Wales under a huge amount of pressure. If we keep our patience, then I think we can get the win. Look, I think this is the big one all along. And unfortunately, whether the team didn't quite get their head into gear for the first match, but we still are negative. When we're talking about Ireland, we're still being hypercritical. We've lost one game in one game only this year, and we won a huge number of games last year. So I think we're due a game of high intensity, and I think it'll be enough.
Okay, good. Final quick two questions. A bit of a theme this week. We've been asking various players. It came up on Monday morning's OTBAM in a sort of bundled its way to this point as well. Rory Best, when he goes, who's the next Irish captain for you?
It depends on his body, but for me, the standout at the moment is Peter O'Mahony. But I think because he beats the crap out of himself every time he steps onto a field, it might be a short-lived one. So it depends. I know he's very young, but from what everybody says, James Ryan is a captain in the making, and it could be a case of building your camp around a guy to be there for the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years.
And then last one, these CVC people, they're not going away. Former Formula One owners, people would have seen, they took a 27% stake in the English Premiership, worth more than 200 million. And now they're coming after the Six Nations in a big way. The plan is to, from a broadcasting point of view, pair the Six Nations and the November tests, and that would raise a huge amount of extra money, and it would mean big money, it seems, for the Six Nations. Certainly if they value 27% of the Premiership at $200 million, you can imagine what that means for the Six Nations. The offer, it seems, is with the Six Nations people. It would obviously completely scupper the World Rugby plans if it went ahead. It would also probably mean that free-to-air Six Nations would be over. Amazon circling, according to various reports. I think for that reason alone, everybody listening in does not want it to happen. What are your thoughts, Keith?
I'm properly worried by it, I have to say. I think there are a lot of flaws in World Rugby's view and their league. I don't necessarily agree with it. And when big numbers get bandied about, everybody gets very excited because this could suddenly put rugby on a financial footing that makes sense. Irrespective of what way you look at it, rugby doesn't make sense at the moment. All the clubs lose money. Most of the unions lose money. So the model that's there isn't entirely right. And it needs to be rectified. Whether that should go to a private equity company who takes stakes in all our different leagues and competitions, people will pay a lot of money for those, but they will look for an awful lot back. Mm. And until we see some level of detail on it, I would look at it not with careful caution, but with full caution. Mm. I just, you know, I'm worried about it because one of the elements of what World Rugby is supposed to look after the game. All the money that is in World Rugby is to go back into the game. It does all go back into the game. We may not like how it goes in. We may say they do certain things wrong. There may not be enough money for some of the other countries or whatever. But ultimately, all the money goes back into the game. And it's made up of the rugby unions. So having a private equity firm on the outside coming in, that changes the whole dynamic as to what happens. And I have to say it from a fan, but from someone who worked on terrestrial television, albeit in the UK, my belief is international rugby matches should be for full view and free to view. I've always thought it. I remember getting a job with the BBC, taking over a particular role in the BBC on the back of a piece of study that they had that for the 1 year that Sky had international rugby, I think it was in 98 or 99, I was the most recognisable player in England over any of the English players from the study that they had done because the rugby was actually on Sky. It wasn't on the BBC anymore. And if that happens, you know that that's not the right thing for it either. You want everybody to watch it.
Yeah. No, you do. The BBC are reporting, Rory, that each of the six unions would benefit 117 million euro up front. It's a lot of money.
Yeah,
it's a worryingly big amount of money, hard money to turn down.
It is, and it's a game, as Keith said, that doesn't make an awful lot of money in, you know, in so many different ways. And it's all part of this thing where rugby's eating itself from the inside. And the Pro 14 are also, you know, there's talk that they're going to be taken over by CBC as well, or at least, you know, not taken over, but they'll take a big stake. And, you know, one of the benefits would be that I think that they would sell the broadcasting rights to all three at once. And I'm not sure, are they going to be part of the Nations League as well to kind of fit into it, in with it as well? And so you suddenly have rugby as a whole packaged as one thing and sold off to one broadcaster. But, you know, I think be careful what you wish for. I think English cricket has gone, you know, basically disappeared off the radar since they went off terrestrial TV. You know, I like the fact that Six Nations are free to air. I don't like the fact that I never know what channel each game is going to be on at the moment. The Pro 14 is very hard to find at times this year. You know, Champions Cup has been the same when it's been split. But for the bean counters and the people making the decisions who have to pay the players, and, you know, Manu Tuilagi signed a deal with Leicester today, turned down massive money at Racing 92. Yeah. The inflation is going up. They're being torn. There's pressure from the clubs, there's pressure from the unions, everyone's pulling in different directions, and it's very hard to know what rugby's going to look like in 10 years' time. Mm. And it doesn't particularly sound like it's going to go in a good direction either.
Regardless, the next 10 years do feel like a real pinch point, decisive period.
Big meeting in Dublin tomorrow, where rugby are meeting over their Nations Championship with the players and the unions.
They'll love
it's all
news.
Happening. I mean, like, the Six Nations news. Is happening, and yeah, actually the drama is happening kind of in the boardrooms at the moment.
Yeah, okay. Well, regardless, this weekend's going to be a cracker. So we'll reconvene next week and reflect on Wales, Ireland and the rest. Keith, thanks a million.
Pleasure. Cheers, gents.
Cheers. Rory O'Connor of the Irish Independent. Thank you.
Good job.
Wednesday night rugby on Off the Ball.
with Vodafone, official sponsors of the Irish rugby team. Team of us, everyone in.